Hey, colleagues, welcome back to the office. It's Steve. Welcome to our podcast and our broadcast for today. Today's class is Password Management Tools, Why and How You Should Use Them, Part 1. We're actually out of the office today, so today is a recording from a recent State Society convention. Today's podcast is going to be focusing on the various ways that we can improve our compliance, improve our practices, and promote better security inside of our organization. Using what? Passwords. Passwords are often our first and in many times our only line of defense against malicious actors from gaining access to our data and to our devices. We have to take it seriously. There's really no choice in today's environment because if people can get access to our computers, they can cause various bad things to occur from identity theft to fraud and much worse. So we're going to start off by taking a look at the different ways that passwords can be breached and attacked through a couple of different methods, including guessing, brute force, social engineering, and more. We're going to discuss the correlation between a password's strength in its length and complexity. Often, the longer a password is and the more varied of the input, the more complex of the input, the stronger that password is. And why is that? We'll look at some different ways that show this relationship and show you that why creating strong passwords really is a necessity of using both a lot of characters and varying those characters in its creation. We'll also look at some of the best practices set forth by the National Institutes for Standardization as well as the SANS Institute. Both are great examples that provide different policies that we can use for creating passwords inside of our organization. We'll also talk about how some different attack occurs, specifically credential stuffing, which is an attack which uses passwords taken from other data breaches and attempts to fraudulently gain access to people's accounts on other services. And this is something that we should all be concerned with. Thankfully, utilizing tools such as two-factor authentication and strong passwords can help reduce our risk and exposure with respect to this particular type of attack. Now, before we get going, I do want to remind you that today's podcast is eligible for CPE credit. After watching or listening to today's podcast, head on over to cpetoday.com, use course code PMT1. You'll take a short 5-question quiz and you will earn a credit for today's class. It's super easy, efficient, fast, and it's a great way of staying on top of your credits. So if you're a certified public accountant or another type of financial professional that requires continuing education, this is a great way to stay on top of your credits. So again, after watching or listening, head on over to cpetoday.com and use course code PMT1. So I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to the Steve of old for today's presentation. At the conclusion of our presentation, I'll join back up with you. We'll do a couple of quick review questions, close up, and get you on your way for today. Thank you so much for being here. Hope you have a great day and enjoy the show. So why are passwords important and what benefit do they add to the organization? Well, first thing you need to understand with respect to passwords is that they are a form of authentication. And passwords and encryption often go hand in hand with each other. So they provide a way of limiting or reducing or hopefully preventing any sort of unauthorized access to the actual device itself. So when something is password protected, like your phone, your tablet, your computer, what we're trying to prevent here is we're trying to prevent any sort of additional person who is not authorized from accessing and utilizing that particular device. So this prevents somebody, you know, if I were to lose my phone, for example, from being able to open my phone up and browse my contacts or access my online banking. It eliminates that potential risk, assuming I'm using a strong password. The other part of this is that it also encrypts the data. A good password protects the data and files on those associated devices to prevent against unauthorized access and being able to access that data. Often when something is password protected, it is also encrypted, meaning that if you were to take that particular device, you could not physically remove, let's say like something like a thumb drive like this, you could not physically remove the chip and be able to read the data contained inside of it. That password protects the data from being able to be read. So in a lot of states, and it does vary state by state, there are safe harbor provisions for encrypted files. If you were to lose a notebook computer that had sensitive company and personal information on it, as long as the data is encrypted, which would mean being behind a password, that data does not represent a data breach. Although I would encourage you to reference the specific states that you are operating in to find out your specific jurisdiction's requirements for safe harbor provisions. But the password that you're adding not only prevents somebody from being able to access that device, but it also prevents somebody from physically being able to take that device apart, put that chip into another computer, and physically connecting it to another machine to pull that data out. Now, unfortunately, humans aren't really good at password management. We're not really good at randomness. Even the things that we do that are seemingly random aren't really random. And as such, passwords often stumble with respect to what people choose for passwords. This should come no shock to anybody, but the most common password in America in 2021 is, with no joke there, it is the word password itself. Definitely not something that we would want to use. And in fact, any common word that has been found, can easily be breached because we have lists, which I'll show you here in a few minutes, of commonly used passwords that are used in what we call dictionary attacks that can be easily cracked. You know, ideally for a password to be strong, it has to be both long, complex, and truly random at the end of the day. So how many of you, for example, are seeing passwords that you might have used before, such as password one or I love you, QWERTY, which are the top row of the keys on the left-hand side of your keyboard in American standards, or 12345. Sadly, these are still quite often used. And if we actually look at the top 100 passwords in 2020, it's still the same list over and over again. It's like we haven't learned anything. We have passwords such as Michael and Master and Pokemon even, and football and others. And this is just causing issues with respect to people being able to compromise these passwords because they're very well known. Now, to start our discussion, let's talk about how hackers try to compromise passwords. And believe it or not, one of the most effective methods is guessing passwords. Guessing a password is actually pretty easy, especially if it's somebody who doesn't really take password management in a really serious manner. More often than not, they're using a password that's pretty easily guessable, and it's often going to be, for example, a combination of their kids or pet names. It could be birthdays. It could be where they work. It could be any number of commonly knowable things. In my graduate program, I did a lot of research around security and policy for organizations, trying to figure out what the best overall policy might be for security and authentication side of a company. I will tell you that there is a direct correlation, an inverse correlation between security and convenience. Okay, something that's more secure is going to be less convenient. Something that's more convenient is going to be less secure. Fundamentally, is this the way? And people ideally want to have passwords that are easily memorable, but unfortunately, those easily memorable passwords are often things in their life that are often things people already know. And when I was in graduate school, my team and I, we put together a program that would scrape a person's Facebook profile. Okay, so we'd point it at a specific Facebook profile. It would read through and would pull out data, names, kids, the pictures that they posted, the things that they talked about, and it would put together a dictionary of potential passwords that person might use. And from our testing, it came out to be about 7% accurate. From a security perspective, that's incredibly good. Well, incredibly bad, depending on what your perspective is. So anything that is commonly known about you should be avoided because we have these dictionaries that can be assembled either by a per person basis or across the mass that are essentially lists of commonly used passwords. If you, for example, just Google the words GitHub password list, you'll come across a variety of different projects that track these potential lists. Let's go ahead and take a look at them. So if we just Google GitHub password list, you'll come across this repository called Security List. And this is a repo, essentially a listing of files that track commonly used security credentials. And if we scroll down here, they've got them broken up into several different categories. Let's go ahead and take a look at this one of these top ones here, which are common credentials. Okay. This is a list of the 10 million most commonly used passwords. Let's just look at the top 1,000 listed here. Okay. What are the odds that your password occurs somewhere in this list of top 1,000, top 10,000, certainly probably in that top 10 million. And if we scroll through here long enough, eventually these are prioritized in terms of the first one is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The second one is password, so on and so forth. You know, this represents this top 10 right here. These top 10 probably represent 40% of all passwords out in the wild. It's crazy. You know, and so you can substitute this logic. Maybe it's the name of your company plus 123 or something like that. We could start to put together a pretty powerful dictionary that you could use to potentially crack other people's stuff. I'm going to show you that here in a moment. But if you scroll through this list, you'll find words, some of which are naughty, which I won't mention. But these are the ranked prioritization of lists of passwords that people use most often. For example, is the word Joseph being the 152nd most commonly used password, or the word Steelers being the 151st most commonly used password. Now, I'm going to skip ahead a little bit, and I want to share a resource with you, and it's called Have I Been Pwned? And this is a funny named website, but it's incredibly helpful for a lot of different reasons, and we're going to refer back to this a couple of different times inside of our presentation today. And what this website does is that it tracks data breaches and lets you know if you have been a part of your data breach based off of either your email address or your cell phone. And you could, or I guess it could be your office or any other phone that you choose to do. And you just drop in your email or phone and it'll check to see if it's been part of a data breach. That in and of itself is pretty cool. And if we get a minute, I'll show you that a little bit later on. As well as you can track it for across a whole domain, and you can even read about other data breaches that have occurred. What I want to draw your attention to is this password section. They have a directory of 613,584,246 real-world passwords that have been exposed in a data breach. These are passwords that have been stolen in like the Adobe hack or Facebook or some of these other breaches where information not only was stolen, but was then made publicly available. Okay. The researcher who put this together, his name is Troy Hunt. He is a employee of Microsoft and a security developer and thought leader in all aspects of security. He's put this together to kind of show you why you should never, ever, 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 ever use commonly used passwords or even any other password that's ever been generated before. Let's take something, for example, like Iowa 12345. Okay, so if we look at this, that password has been used 48 other times, meaning somebody took that password, used it on some sort of website, that website got hacked, and that's out in the wild. And that's happened 48 times, meaning if you used Iowa 1234, well, guess what? At some point, somebody is going to have a list, and it's going to appear in that list, and given enough time, they will be able to crack that. It's not like we use, for example, randomness anymore of ABC, ABC, 1, 2, 3, so on and so forth. We have structured lists of data that are quite effective for being able to breach people's passwords. Now, if we make it a little bit more complex, let's say a capital I, let's say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Good news. I guess that one hasn't itself been exposed. But if we just do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, we'd see even that has been exposed 10 times. So again, not something we would want to use. Ideally, we want to come up with something where that password doesn't appear on any list, because if it appears on any list at any point, it's going to be used in one of these dictionary attacks. Now, what do they do with these dictionary attacks? Well, for these dictionary attacks, they do what's called brute forcing. Now, a brute force is where we essentially try a username and password repeatedly until it breaks, okay? And given enough time, it's inevitable. Now, the longer and stronger a password is, the least likely that's going to occur. And we'll talk more about that here in a little bit in terms of how long it takes for some of these things to occur. But ultimately, what they're trying to do is brute force. And so they just try and they run through that list of 100 million passwords one by one sequentially until they find the password that works. And given enough time, anything can be broken. Now, two things I'll add about brute force. First thing, you know, some of these attacks, yes, given enough time, it will occur. However, you know, some of these things might be literally the universe will die from heat death before that password is cracked. So that's ideally what we're going for. So I don't want to give you this false assumption that no password can be cracked. All passwords eventually will be cracked. However, it just becomes increasingly less likely given today's technology. But who the heck knows what will happen in the future? The other thing about brute force attacks is that people will often ask, well, Steve, you know, what about, like rate limits? What if I only can try it every, 10 seconds? Or what if I can only do 5 attempts and it locks me out? That's under best case scenario. You should know that those are best practices. There's no laws in any country regarding how passwords need to be structured for the most part. You know, there's guidance based off of industry, like what PCI or FINRA or HIPAA says how data should be safeguarded. But there's no major constitutional law saying your password has to be this long. So when we say like, hey, it should lock you out after 3 or 4 attempts, that's a best practice, and that's not always widely implemented. And the end user, like you have no decision making on whether or not the provider, Microsoft, Google, whomever, actually employs that said technique. We can use what is called password sniffing software, and this can happen either with a hardware device or a physical device, or it could also be a malware, that you accidentally download on your device that essentially knows what websites you're going. It keeps track of those particular websites and will log those passwords. We used to call these things called keyloggers, and they were really actually quite prevalent in the 90s and the first part of the last decade, although I will say the physical hardware devices of these have quite diminished in recent years, I think for a lot of different reasons, the biggest of which most of us have moved to smartphones, as well as the software's gotten better. Most software operating systems can detect when a physical hardware device is sniffing data. But be aware, that there are these physical hardware devices. And what this does is it sits between the computer and the keyboard. And as the user is typing things on their physical keyboard, it's keeping track of that data. And then somebody comes by after the fact and pulls it out. But thankfully, most of these are detectable now. But that doesn't mean it could not be detectable using software. And malware is increasingly becoming more and more commonplace. So we have to be very careful because this software can get installed and eventually steal data. But what I would say as by far the biggest risk that any organization faces is social engineering. Okay. Social engineering is a specific type of attack where you manipulate people to willingly hand over data about themselves and about their companies. In security research, you'll often hear don't hack the machine, hack the person. And that's very true. Most machines, an up-to-date Windows 10 machine is impenetrable, at least today. Probably not tomorrow. Certainly not a year from now, but today it's a very, very secured machine, and it's very difficult to do large scale data breaches of machines. However, it is so easy to do with people. And if we look at most large scale data breaches, in some respect, they're employing some method of social engineering, manipulating people to willingly hand over information about them. It could be, for example, somebody calls up and said, hey, I'm Steve from the IT department. I need your password so I can log in and fix an issue, to somebody portraying themselves as a client and needing access to their client portal to download their most recent tax return, and really kind of anything in between. We need to be vigilant with respect to social engineering. You need to realize that everything can be spoofed, whether it be a text message on your phone, an email, or really anything else. Don't trust it. From experience, don't trust it. You need to be vigilant, and you need to put procedures in place to ensure that your staff are vigilant as well, because it only takes one person being fooled, essentially, that they're talking to the IT team or talking to Microsoft, or the IRS calls them and they willingly hand over social security information, for that data breach to occur. Now, one such attack that we should be familiar with, and this is becoming more in common, is what we call credential stuffing. And in fact, several large Fortune 500 companies over the last couple of years have fallen victim to this. And in this particular type of attack, it's important to note, the Fortune 500 companies that have fallen victim to this actually did not experience a data breach, but rather they're guilty of poor best practices. They're guilty of letting their users make bad security decisions. And because those companies didn't want to make it a little bit more difficult for their customers, they eventually had their data stolen. That customers did anyways. So in a credential stuffing attack, this is when hackers compile, typically through purchase, username and passwords that were leaked from other security breaches. Okay. And then they take those lists and then they go around to other websites to see if those credentials happen to work. You know, so let's say, for example, I buy a list of passwords that were exposed in a XYZ company data breach, you know, and I see that, for example, they weren't encrypted. So those passwords we know are still valid and those passwords were not salted and hashed so they can easily be decrypted. And I see, for example, Steve, you know, was using Angels Baseball 123 in every website, you know, in that particular website. Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go check out Wells Fargo and Bank of America, and I'm going to go to Intuit, and I'm going to go to these other places, and I'm going to see if that password still works. And the reason being is that a lot of people use the same password on multiple websites for years on end. They never change them. And hackers will buy these passwords just to see if it will work on their particular site. They'll build automated tools. I've built these too for security research purposes. And these tools that I have that I've built will go through a database or through a spreadsheet, and a column will be username, a column will be password. And I will iterate through to see if I can crack something. And I'll do this for our own software to see if it will hold up. And assuming the website isn't designed to reject a certain number of attempts, failed attempts, but instead just accept it, that person will be able to get in. So that's exactly what happened over the last couple of years. TurboTax, for example, they were compromised. ShareFile was compromised. Microsoft was compromised, as well as others. And if these credentials were accepted, the automated software would know that it was accepted, flag that as a valid account, and then hand that information over to the attacker. Now, in the case of TurboTax, here's what ended up happening. Well, they were able to take this information and download prior tax returns, including unencrypted data, data that was unencrypted with the taxpayer's full financial records, including W-2s, 1099, Social Security numbers, so on and so forth. They would then change the email address associated with that TurboTax login, you know, from the client, the actual person's, to theirs. Why? Because they don't want the client to be notified in the future that somebody logged in or a tax return was filed or a refund was received. And then ultimately, in the case of TurboTax, they filed a current year tax return using a separate banking account, and the refund was ultimately issued to them fraudulently. Now, it's important to note, in this case, Intuit, ShareFile, Microsoft, they did not have a data breach here. The customer had a data breach. The customer had a data breach because they reused compromised credentials from another site. And from that other site, because those were stolen, they were able to log in and be able to take data from the affected site. So Intuit didn't have a data breach here, but what they are guilty with is allowing customers not to use good passwords. They were not forcing two-factor authentications. You know, and so what that tells you is, with respect to passwords, and one of the major considerations here is you always use a separate password for whatever website you're going to. In case that password is compromised, you've siloed your risk to that particular site. Let's go ahead and switch back real quick and take a look at Have I Been Pwned, so I can really hopefully drill this point home. Okay, so on the main screen of Have I Been Pwned, this would be where I could put in an email or a phone number. Now, I'm just going to go ahead and throw in a sample email here. Let's just say it's johnny@gmail.com as an example. Okay. Now, if we go and we search johnny@gmail.com, no surprise there. I'm sure that's a fake email for everybody. But that email address has been exposed on 140 data breaches. Okay. Now, if we scroll down through here, we can actually start to see some of the data breaches that it was affected by. So for example, we can see that it was in a 500 pixels data breach. It was an Adobe data breach. We can see that it was in the Apollo data breach and more, Bitly and, you know, many different, breaches over those years. If you were to put your own email in here, don't be shocked to find that you're probably at least a part of a dozen or more data breaches that might have been affected. Now, what this website will show you is that it will show you what data was compromised. In the case of here, let's stop on Dropbox as an example. It will show us that, for example, our email address and the password for that particular account was taken. It'll also give you some information about what was taken out of that specific breach. Now, if we scroll down, other websites here might have gotten other information. For this Eat Street breach, okay, dates of birth, email, gender, phone, name, passwords, so on and so forth. Evite, same thing. This one occurred in 2019. Dates of birth, email addresses, so on and so forth. So unfortunately, with that data breach, some of that data will ultimately get sold on the dark web, and on the dark web, people will buy it and then will subsequently try to use it on other organizations to see if they can get in. Now, again, people usually ask, like, hey, Steve, you know, like if I, you know, if it's locking me out, do I need to worry about it? And the answer is no. You know, if you have a service, for example, three bad attempts, it locks you out for 5 minutes. More often than not, you're probably okay, you know, because we're essentially trying to rate limit things. With brute forcing, it's dependent on the need of being able to try hundreds, if not thousands or tens of thousands of attempts a second to be able to compromise something. However, if it's something like a file, you know, imagine you had some sort of secret important data on this thumb drive right here. And on that secret important thumb drive, you had an Excel workbook that was encrypted and password protected, and you wanted to ensure that it wasn't lost or stolen or compromised. But if it was, somebody wouldn't be able to open it up. Well, when you have file level encryption, I'm talking PDFs, I'm talking Excel, I'm talking Word files and more. Well, you can utilize different tools. There's one such tool called PassAware. PassAware is a recovery tool that is available for individual use, business use, as well as law enforcement, that allows you to be able to brute force different types of files. So you should never, ever, ever rely on the encryption that is provided, for example, like in an Excel file, because there's a good chance that it could ultimately be compromised. Let me go ahead and give you an example of what I'm talking about here. So let's say, for example, we're working in an Excel file. That Excel file maybe is a password list. You know, I've talked with many people over the years that create a password list, and then they will, for example, have a Excel document that contains that listing of passwords, and that's their password management tool. You know, so let's say, for example, we've got this list over here, and let's say it's Google. Okay, then the username is going to be Johnny@gmail.com, and then the password, let's say, is accounting rules, like that. Okay, and then this will be their password management tool. Well, the problem with this is that if you're storing this in Excel workbook, even though it's encrypted, and that's better than nothing, I've seen plenty worse over the years, this file itself can be compromised ultimately. Okay, here's what people normally end up doing. They come over here to the file menu. From the file, they come over here to the info option, and then they select encrypt with password, and they'll set the password up. Let's just say 12345, like this. Okay. Now this workbook is encrypted. It is. So we're going to save that here. And if I were to go and close this workbook, let's go ahead and close that here and then open it back up, I would have to put in a password for that password manager file that I've since created. Okay. And it's going to pop up like this. Now, if I don't know the password, it's not going to let me in. Okay. But the problem with this is that I have an unlimited number of attempts before it will let me in. So I could try this over and over and over again. There are tools. One such tool that you should be aware of is a tool called PassAware. And this is a tool that you can purchase that focuses on recovery of passwords. Now, it's offered in a couple of different solutions. They've got a law enforcement solution that you have to be qualified law enforcement to use, but they also have home and small office. And if we take a look at their Standard Plus, this will open up 130 different applications on your computer. And if we scroll down here, we could see that it fully supports the Microsoft Office formats. For $50, I can go ahead and I can open up this file. It'll also work with a number of other tools as well, including things, other common types like PDFs and QuickBook files and other things of this nature. And the issue with individual file level encryption is that you can attempt to break it an unlimited number of times. That file just exists on that computer, and you can really kind of go nuts with respect to how frequently you can break it. There's no underlying server technology that's going to enforce a particular type of workflow. So if you're relying on file level security, please be aware that there are a number of tools that can significantly reduce your overall security. So in our next section, let's go ahead and talk through current standards for passwords. And it might be a little bit different than what you were probably expecting or even thinking about. Now, the recommendations that I'm going to make today come from the National Institute for Standardization, which is a U.S. government organization that focuses on everything from how do we account for time to what is the official definition of a pound or a mile. Well, they have a number of government recommended tips, basically, for what makes a good password. And I think it's an overall pretty good recommendation. Now, there's going to be a couple of things that I think are going to kind of be like, oh, I didn't think about that before for you, that are contradictory from even what we said maybe even a year ago at our tech conference then. Okay, so according to the National Institutes for Standardization, passwords should be a minimum of 8 characters if limited guess attempts, longer if there is no guess limits. Now, what does that mean? What they're saying is that if you have best practices around limiting, for example, people from being able to create unlimited number of attempts for passwords, you don't need to make it crazy long. This goes hand in hand with down here. You do not need to change it as frequently. Now, the old best practice was that when you set a password, it should be rotated every 3 months, and it should be 50 characters long and, tons of other things that we'll talk about here in a moment. That's not the same anymore. The reason being is that we found that when we made passwords arbitrarily long and non-memorable, and we made people change them every 3 to 4 months, that the people ended up choosing less secure passwords. They ended up getting into the same scenario of, let's just say, CPA Society 123, and the next month it would be CPA Society 124, so on and so forth. But if the company, that's essentially making the software or managing that system puts in some best practices around limiting the number of attempts a person can use, saying, hey, you can only try 10 attempts before you're locked out for an hour, or you can only do it 5 attempts before you're locked out for 10 minutes or something like that. The needs of actually making these crazy long passwords go down dramatically because it makes it very improbable for someone to be able to compromise that particular account. Likewise, there's no need to constantly change passwords anymore. Really, you should only change a password if there's evidence of a data breach. It would be better for you to choose a very strong, memorable password that's long and memorable to you than to take something that has to be changed every couple of months and just always having to remember what that new password is or hopefully not. But I've seen this plenty of times, writing it on a post-it note and smacking it to the front of your computer or on your phone. We just saw over the years that that is what people ended up doing more often than not. So at least 8 characters if you could only have a certain number of attempts before you locked out. However, if you don't have those techniques in place, it should be longer. Now, my personal recommendation, if you were to stop me on the street and ask, my recommendation would be it should be at least 18 characters long. And I'm going to preface this. I'll probably say this a few times throughout our presentation today. There are only 3 passwords I know off the top of my head. Okay. They are the password to my devices. So the password to my computer, the password to my notebook. Okay. The password to my password manager. I use LastPass. I'm going to talk about password managers in a little bit. And then the password to my email. Okay. Email is often the last resort thing. And you always want to be able to get access to your email. And if your password is locked up in a password manager and that becomes compromised, that could cause a serious issue. So I always recommend you store your main email account password separately. And if you follow the methodology that I'm going to talk about here, those are the only three things you need to remember: the password to your computer, the password to your email, the password to your password management solution. Everything else is stored in that password management tool, whether it be RoboForm, LastPass, KeePass, Dashlane, Zoho Vault, or others. You don't need to remember them. They're all stored in that password management solution. Now, other recommendations from the National Institutes for Standardization. Okay, you should not pick a password found in a previous data breach. As I showed you using Have I Been Pwned a moment ago, we know what those passwords are. You shouldn't pick dictionary words, nor should you pick specific words that are easily guessable. The name of a service, the pet name, birthday, anything about you that can be found online, really kind of anything else, you know, that you could think of. And you should be encouraged to make the password as long as you want it to be. You know, as I mentioned, most of my passwords are in excess of 18 characters. For those three passwords I know off the top of my head, they're all about 35 characters long, you know, so they're not short by any stretch. You'll see why here in a minute. Now, the old way of thinking about this used to just be long and strong and change frequently. It was like a cat and mouse game. It was like a shadow boxing, you know, where we didn't know the right procedures and techniques to make this work well. So what did we end up doing? We ended up just making passwords crazy long with lots of complexity, telling people they can't lock, write them down anywhere. And we just ended up with people picking long, but very easily guessable passwords. You know, now, again, we've got these other techniques, I think, that make it a little bit more approachable. But let's talk about length and complexity and the ability to crack it. Okay, so in this particular example, what you're seeing here is a list and a table that shows you how long it takes certain passwords to be compromised and what that would potentially mean to a cracker trying to brute force that password. You know, if we were to have a single password that is one character long, the possible universe, the possible combination of characters would be 95. Why? Well, there's 128 keys on the US keyboard. You take out the duplicates like the numbers, and you take out the function keys, and you check out other keys that can't be used. Well, you end up with about 95 keys that are potentially usable. Well, that takes no time to crack. Well, if you just go from 1 to 2, well, that goes up from 95 to 9,025. And we start to see exponential growth with this. You know, something that's five characters long gives you a possible combination of over 7 billion passwords. However, look at this average number of days attack still takes nothing. You know, it's not until we get to really, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15 characters long that we become in a scenario where the length of time it would take to crack that password becomes unrealistic. So there is a direct correlation in a password strength with its length and complexity. The more varied in terms of the number of characters you're using and the length of this, and I would say if you had to choose one or the other, length would be what I would choose, that you really get a password that's strong. You know, we have a number of great encryption algorithms. AES 256 is the one that pops to mind immediately, and it's a great encryption standard. As long as you use a good password, you know, if you use a password that's five characters long, you're absolutely going to experience a data breach. But if you use AES 256 plus a 15, 18, 20 character password, you know, again, the sun will burn out way, way, way before that password could be cracked. And that's assuming 5 million hack attempts per second. So you could see it starts becoming incredibly unrealistic for somebody to be able to compromise that account. So what are these characteristics of long and strong passwords? Well, according to the SANS Institute, and you could check these people out, sans.org, they're a wonderful training organization focusing on cybersecurity and governance. They've got a number of incredible resources, including free policies and webinars and white papers and blogs. It's a really good resource if you're looking to learn more about security for your organization. Well, according to them, And they have a great policy on this. This is what they define a long and strong password as being. They would say it should contain at least 12 alphanumeric characters. It should contain both upper and lower case characters. It should contain numbers 0 to 9. And it should contain at least one special character, including these characters here. You know, and I would tell you that short of the three passwords I know off the top of my head, all of my passwords follow those recommendations. Okay. The three passwords off the top of my head are very long. And actually, let me just share with you my quick recommendation with respect to how I generate passwords, you know, for myself. How do I come up with those three passwords that I myself use? Well, there's lots of different techniques to come up with randomness, you know, but a technique that I've often used, I'll pick something, you know, like a book, or I'll pick a newspaper. I happen to have the PGI bulletin with me right here. Okay. This is for amateur pyrotechnics and rocketry. I'm always been a big fan of that. And let's say I wanted to generate a password that I myself would know off the top of my head. Well, I'll pick up a book, I'll pick up a magazine, I'll pick up something, and I'll look through that magazine. And what I'm ultimately going to do is I'm going to pick out maybe five or six different words. You know, so as an example here, it might be sulfur, possible, composition, Pierre, 872, you know, something like that. Well, that's actually quite memorable for the most part. And it's also very random and it's long. It's like 30 characters long. That's how I come up with the passwords that are important to me. You know, I try to find something that's memorable, something that is truly random. And that's a heck of a lot easier remembering than, you know, 18 characters of truly just gibberish. And those will be the basis of the passwords I keep in my head. Would be using this technique of just picking a book up, finding words, pushing them together, and whatever you choose to use. And as you can see, I've got a full library behind me. Now, for the other passwords, the passwords that will ultimately be in my password management solution, the software generates them all automatically for me. And that password generator will pick that password and will make it whatever complexity and whatever length I would like it to be. And by doing this, I get the best of both worlds. You know, the assumption is as long as I can get into my password manager is going to contain all the other passwords that I might need to know to get into every other website. Again, I only need to know three: the password to my computer, the password to my email, the password to my password management solution. So let me give you a quick example of this. Now, I personally, I use LastPass with respect to my password management. So here is the LastPass password manager and the password generator. Try saying that five times fast. So I can generate whatever type of password I would want from this. But as you can see here, this is not a very memorable thing. So this would be an example of a password that I would choose, for example, for like Delta Airlines or American Airlines. I don't need to know the password for those services. I essentially just go into the password manager and it's listed there. Well, I could tell this, for example, however long I'd like it to be. So I can say, you know what, it should be 35 characters long, you know, or I could say maybe it's a specific website and they only allow maybe 15 characters long. And I could also say whether or not it should include upper or lower. I can also say whether or not it should include numbers or be all alpha, or whether or not it should include special characters. You know, but this password right here would be an example of a password that I would use in any website. Okay. And for this, let's go ahead and just take a look. Let's see if this has been compromised before. We can go back over here to have I been pwned. We can drop that password in here. And sure enough, that never has appeared in any other breach. Here's another cool website, howsecureismypassword.net. Okay. If we drop this password in here, it would take 15 billion years. And if I remember correctly, I believe the sun will burn out in about 6. So this will take double the time of the sun burning out in order to be cracked. Now, we can go a lot further than that. You can go up to 100 characters, I believe. You know, so if we take this, okay, and we drop that in over here, okay, I don't know how, I can't even pronounce this, but I could tell you it's a long time from now, and I'm pretty sure there'll be nothing left by the end of it. So that gives you a sense of complexity with this, and longer and more complex is always preferred as much as possible. But for the passwords you do need to know off the top of your head, make them memorable, make them long if you had to choose between length and complexity. Now, Sans also has some other recommendations that we should be familiar with. Okay, you should have a firewall between your business and your personal life. Do not mix at all. You don't want a data breach from your personal life to affect your clients, nor do you want a client's data breach affecting your personal life. As much as you can, you might want to consider utilizing two different password management tools or at least two separate accounts, one for work, one for business. At the very minimum, never, ever, 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 ever reuse passwords between your personal life and your business life. In fact, never reuse passwords at all. Okay. If you think of travel organizations, let's just look at airlines and hotels. We've got Delta, American, Southwest, Alaska, Frontier. Those are the five I can think of off the top of my head. Hotels, we got Sheraton, we got Marriott, we got Hilton, we've got, a bunch of other ones, right? Well, in those situations, I would have a separate password for every single airline, a separate password for every single booking hotel for every website. You never reuse passwords because you don't want the data breach of one to cause a data breach in the other. And you certainly don't want something between your personal and your business life. Okay. We no longer recommend that system level passwords be changed quarterly. We no longer recommend that user level passwords be changed every 4 months. You only change passwords when there's evidence of a data breach. It does you and the user no good by forcing password changes repeatedly because people are just going to choose a less secure password. Well, we still recommend don't share passwords with everybody. I think that makes sense for everybody. Why? Well, it's because if you share passwords with different people, we have no way of promoting accountability. If Steve has Kathy's password and Kathy has Bob's password and vice versa, and those passwords are used between different services, how are we ever going to be able to hold people accountable if money goes missing, data gets breached, or some sort of other nasty surprise? Passwords are single use per person. And often this is a bigger issue with smaller business than it is bigger business, especially for SaaS related services, software as a service, you know, where passwords are tied to an individual user account and businesses are charged per user account for what they have. Unfortunately, small businesses, they want to save money in places that they shouldn't try to be saving money. And if it's something like, for example, a user account for 365 or something like that, you absolutely want to have a separate account for each individual person because it's important that proper data security be employed as whenever possible. Never reveal passwords over the phone. This should go without saying, but still it does happen quite regularly where people will portray themselves as being part of the IT team, portray themselves as being part of operations team and convince people, hey, you know, I need to log in on your behalf and share your password with me. Don't do that. Anybody who's in IT can already get in already. They have administrator access to the accounts that you're using. So there's really kind of no need for you to have to share those passwords with them. They just have that already at their access. I don't recommend you use the remember password feature in apps or browsers. Use the password management tool of your choice. In my case, I use LastPass, which is fully supported in Edge, Firefox, Chrome, and all of my mobile devices. So there's no need for Chrome or Firefox to remember my password. The tool does it for me. The other reason I like about that, instead of using, for example, the password tool from the browser, but rather using a third-party tool, is that Chrome's password tool only works in Chrome, vice versa for all the other solutions. I'm often using several different browsers, including mobile devices. Well, as such, I want my tool to be present in every application I use. LastPass, RoboForm, KeePass, others like this are independent of the browser, which I find to be a much better deployment method. When in suspect of a data breach, ensure that all passwords are changed immediately, starting with your most high-value password. What? Your email. Always change your email password when suspected data breach occurs. Now, passwords should not contain certain characteristics. Any sort of personal information, birth dates, addresses, phone numbers, date of births, family members, pets, things are always things that we talk about. There's things that we have online. There are things that are on our social media accounts. And the bad guys know that too. As such, that's what they're often going to go to first when they're trying to compromise your account. And as I've talked about earlier, guessing is a very effective way to be able to do that. Don't use work-related information, building names, system lines, commands, hardware, software, anything like that. Likewise, no repeatable patterns should be used. Don't, for example, use commonly used words, but substituting special characters or spelled backwards. Like as an example here, let's say you had a password of secret, and you change maybe the S for a dollar sign and the E for the at sign. I hate to break it to you, we figured that one out. So that doesn't necessarily make you more secure. In fact, I would say it's completely irrelevant at this point. So according to the National Institute for Standardization, for a password's strength, the biggest requirement is length. Okay. The longer something is, the stronger it is. The longer and more random, the longer and more complex. Both of those will contribute to the password's strength. However, if you had to choose one or the other, length is the way to go. A long password is going to be the primary reason why a password can be secure. Complexity leads to frustration, and it's likely to cause people to choose simpler passwords than they would otherwise choose. Generally, I would say make it long. And if you can throw a couple extra symbols, even just throwing in, for example, an ampersand or an at sign or something like that, just one is often enough. Passwords should be randomly chosen by some sort of automation tool. As I showed you, the password management solutions that are out there, like LastPass, will do this for you automatically. What do you end up with? You end up with a scenario where you only remember three passwords: the password to your computer, the password to your password management tool, and the password to your email. Otherwise, everything's stored in the software, and it's generated on your behalf whenever needed. You don't have to remember it. Now, there are some protection policies that you should have in place. Okay. Now, I would tell you first and foremost, you should have a policy in place with your organization, and these people should be trained. Once they're trained, once the policy is set, it should be, for example, instituted into your corporate handbook, so that people are held accountable. If it's in the handbook, people know about it. People are going to follow it. If it's not in the handbook, they're not going to be accountable. Passwords should never be shared. Do not use the same password for other services. Now, what's kind of cool is the SANS Institute actually has some great policies that you can consider putting in place for your organization. Let's go ahead and take a look at that here by going and opening up our favorite internet browser and going to SANS.org. Okay, so if I come over here to SANS.org, and if I look on the lower right-hand side here, you'll see we have a button that says Free Resources. If we click that little button, it is going to take us to a listing of the free resources put together by the SANS Institute. They have webcasts and white papers and a blog and a newsletter to help you learn. And if we come on over here to the right-hand side, you'll see the security policy templates are listed. And if we click that guy, we have a listing of fantastic security policies that we can put in place inside of our organization. Now, these policies are copyrighted. However, they're free to use. You can modify them to your heart's content. What they mean by the copyright is you can't sell this, so you couldn't sell these to your clients, but you absolutely can come in here and modify it and put it and help your clients implement it in your organization. And if we scroll down, you'll see a variety of different policies. Everything, for example, from a clean desk policy to antivirus guidelines, data breach response, email policy, retention, ethics. They've got a ton of stuff in here. And they've also got a couple of here with respect to passwords. They've got their construction guidelines as well as their password protection. Now, you can download these either in PDF form or in doc form. And let's go ahead and just download the doc form. And this is going to download a Word file. And it is a find and replace. It's kind of like a Mad Libs thing where it says company name, you put in your company name, and you replace the other bits of this that make sense for your organization. So this policy, okay, passwords are an important part of computer security. It'll give you a nice overview of why we're doing this. Likewise, here's the policy. OK, Okay. All user and system level passwords must conform to the password construction guidelines. Users must use a separate unique password for each of their work-related accounts. Users may not use any work-related password for their personal accounts. And it goes on and on about some of the major aspects of this, including how it should be protected, how and when multi-factor utilization should be done, so on and so forth. And you can take this policy and you can modify it to meet the specific needs of your organization. You know, it's a heck of a lot easier than trying to come up with this stuff from scratch. And SANS Institute makes this available to anybody who choose to utilize it. I've done this several times, not only for my business, but for my clients. And it's a great way to get a jump start on passwords inside your company and effectively managing it for your staff. All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed today's presentation. Let's go ahead and finish up our class for today with some review questions about what was discussed in today's podcast. Our first review question is, which of the following techniques could a hacker use in an attempt to compromise your passwords? Is it social engineering? You betcha, they could totally use that. And that's where they manipulate you to willingly hand over your password. Is it password sniffing software? Yep. There's plenty of malware out there that will specifically look for websites like your bank and others and try to steal the passwords when you're on those specific sites. Is it brute force attacks? Yes, absolutely. They can use dictionaries and other information known about you to attempt to break into your account. So the correct answer here is all of the above. Our next question, a password sniffer or keylogger is... could it be a physical hardware device that sits between the keyboard and computer? You betcha. It could totally be that. Could it be a software malware device? Absolutely. It could be that as well. So the correct answer here is, again, all of the above. A password sniffer could be a hardware device that is installed on the computer that sits between the computer keyboard and the computer itself, or could be malware that is installed on your computer. Our final review question. How often should be passwords be rotated and changed? Is it once a month? No, that is way too frequently. Is it once a quarter? Nope, still way too frequently. Once a year? Maybe, but not really. That's not really a best practice anymore. The correct answer here is only if there's been evidence of a data breach or to meet other specific compliance criteria. If you're subject to something like HIPAA or something like that, that stipulates specific rotation for passwords. But it's better to let people set a password and keep a password than to constantly make them change it, because more often than not, they will pick something less secure. So that does bring us to the end of our presentation for today. And in today's class, we discussed the role of passwords in securing and encrypting our devices, how passwords are often our first and only line of defense for our systems, and we have to take it seriously in order to prevent things like a data breach or our information being stolen. We talked about the characteristics of good password practices and how to design good passwords in our companies and for ourselves. In future courses in this series, we're going to discuss a lot of the major password management tools, including Dashlane, LastPass, Zoho, and many others. These tools are some of the best tools that are out there, and they are very effective with respect to helping ensure that you're meeting specific best practices for password management. We'll also talk about some other login options besides using passwords, such as multi-factor, FIDO, and other biometric tools that can be helpful for promoting compliance. Now, I do want to remind you, if you are a certified public accountant or another financial professional and you're subject to continuing education for your license, you can earn credits for listening to today's podcast. It's super simple. After watching or listening to today's podcast, head on over to cpetoday.com and use course code PMT1. You'll take a short 5-question quiz and you'll earn a credit for listening to today's podcast and completing that quiz. It's a fast, efficient way of staying on top of your license. So again, check out cpetoday.com and use course code PMT1 for today's class. If you liked our material, we'd love for you to follow us on social media. You can find us on almost all social media channels at CPE Today. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and more. We'd love to know what you think. Feel free to reach out and leave us a message or a comment. Additionally, you can always listen to the CPE Today podcast on your time. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and more. We'd love for you to consider subscribing so that you can get access to our materials as soon as they are released. We're always putting out new content, so it's a great way of staying on top of what you need to know to stay competitive as a financial professional. Thank you so much for your time and attention today. It is an absolute pleasure being with you, and I look forward to seeing you back in the office sometime soon. Take care.